Hello, welcome to Cafe SoCo. My name's Dan Gold. This is a very special edition of Cafe SoCo for me. We are in the what I call the co-working or business lounge of my office. This is a lovely space where we sit down, we have lunch, we talk to guests. It's just a really nice area. With me today in this wonderful, relaxing space is Kelsey Fraser from the Saskatoon Police Service. She works for the Department of Public Affairs. I'm sure it's worded slightly differently than that.
Same thing.
What is it you do?
So in my role as Senior Public Affairs Consultant, I oversee and am responsible for all of the services' social media. And so if you follow us on social media, you may know that we have a bit of a decentralized social media strategy. So we have our main accounts, and then we have offshoots into various areas, our canine unit, air support, traffic, and a few individuals. In addition to overseeing the strategy for social media, I also assist with traditional media relations, event planning, website development, copywriting, kind of the whole gamut of communications, I suppose.
You've got a decentralized account, and I talk to a lot of public bodies, and there is fear about decentralized accounts. Who's administering this? What if we say something over here that's not said over there? Or even worse, if someone comments on a post over here and we don't see it because of over there, tell me what you do in sense of monitoring.
So I have kind of a specific number of accounts that I set my limit to, if you will. So my capacity in monitoring, too many more accounts, and I don't have the ability to monitor effectively and efficiently. So that's kind of how we gauge that. In terms of, you know, the whole why we went down the decentralized, I'd like to say that I'm Superwoman and I can be in all places at once, but that is just not always the case. So we made the decision to start to decentralize and showcase different areas of the service. I live by my phone beside me, but not 24/7. And this gave a chance to showcase those other areas that I wasn't able to get to. And as everybody knows, policing is a 24/7 type of service. And this just allowed us a little bit more flexibility.
When you look at the number of accounts that you have, and then the themes that you have for those accounts, and then overarching themes for the for either a campaign period or the consistent messaging that you have that goes across all of the accounts to make sure that your core messages aren't missed by people only following one and not all of them. Right. How do you look at programming when it comes to a big event when there's bits which are relevant to all of them and some bits which are relevant only to a few of them?
I think that comes back to really clear and concise communications on the back end. So establishing those channels of communications between, you know, the overall organization accounts. So something that I do myself you know, the accounts where it may fall under them as well. You know, coordinating hashtags to make sure we're all talking about the same thing, using the same hashtag. That sort of a stuff. So really making sure those back channels, and that also extends to other community organizations as well, not just our own. So our partners in emergency response, whether it be MedEvy or Fire or the city, EMO, having those back lines of communications, for sure in terms of social media, is hugely beneficial.
And just looking at social media, you don't treat social media in a silo. It's a tool set in amongst your total list of tactics, tools, and the wider strategy. How do you make sure that people internal to the organization don't immediately go, it's only social media, it doesn't matter, we need to send out this or get a thing done? Or how do you manage their expectations?
Well, it's funny, they either have that reaction or it's social media is the key to solving all my problems. And that's not necessarily true either. So there's definitely a balancing act. And I always say that, you know, when you compare policing, we always, our officers have a duty belt, right, with a number of tools. Our social media is just a, it's a tool on our tool belt, essentially. But yes, for sure, it goes back to communications and having those channels open too.
And with your teams and different, because it's a large organization, it's a very complex structure when I look at it from the outside, but your communications is very clean lines as I see it. How many people actually post directly or communicate directly or speak on behalf of a department to make sure that there aren't 1,000 messages going out or suddenly opinions are going out there? Because if you've got all these different accounts and different departments, there's likely to be different voices.
Right. And I think that's where the decentralization into their areas of expertise comes in. So, for example, our canine unit isn't going to be tweeting or posting about something not related to them. It is strictly related to their work and the cases and files that they're involved in. The same with our air support unit. They're not going to be tweeting about canine unless they're involved in the same call and saying that they assist. So I think everybody has their parameters, and it goes back to the training and the development of those when they're first created and kind of laying those ground rules. We have, you know, social media guidelines that are developed and everybody goes through them. Everyone knows that my door is always open. If they have any questions, it really doesn't matter what time. I mentioned that my phone is always on me. So if they have questions, that's something I've always said is don't hesitate to give me a call and we can work through it together.
Do you have a policy or a simple backstop, which is if in doubt, don't, to people where, you know, someone might go, well, it might be really useful, but I'm not sure, so I might just wait.
Yeah, and we term that basically trust your gut. And if you have second thoughts, to step away for a few minutes and think about it. And if you come back and you're still feeling iffy, again, give me a call or don't post right away.
The way I draw a parallel to that is when you've had a shocking moment, not shock as in terrible, bad, but in the sense that a moment where you feel a bit wound up, and it happens to us all. And you start writing an email that you're going to fire off and just go out in a blaze and send it and not really think about the impact or the perception of it. I think that if you've got this idea that it's like, if you're not sure, step away from it, reevaluate it, go back to it. If you still feel like that, pick up a phone because probably writing it down isn't a good idea.
No, and that's for sure the same thing with social media. I think it's even easier to get into those kind of moments where somebody is criticizing. Maybe they don't know the whole story. You're doing your best to educate them or not even educate, but inform. I have a thing on my wall, I guess, that says social media combat is unwinnable and it's pointless. And so to follow up with that, I have a rule of three. Typically, three engagements that I'll give them to have that discussion in a rational type of manner, a voice. And if it's still not going there, I'll either try and take it offline. So I'll have somebody that's an expert that this person is trying to talk about, reach out. And otherwise, that's kind of it. I'm not going to go back and forth on social media for everyone to see and try and argue a point.
Where is the line between public affairs, external communications, social media, media releases, working with a marketing element? Where does it move to internal communications? Is that a separate department or is it everything dealt with by the public affairs team or communications in general?
Yeah, the public affairs team. And when you were saying earlier that, you know, our communications are very streamlined, or that's the perception, and thank you for that. I will take that as a compliment. They are, I think, in part because we have such a small team. There are three of us, three and a half of us that manage.
I feel sorry for the half person.
He's got other duties too.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so we have, you know, we're all very close. Like, our offices are right across from each other. There's a lot of yelling across the hall to make sure that everybody is on the same page.
I believe that's called open communications. You're not allowed to call it yelling anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. Yelling in a good way. It's making sure that everybody can hear. So Between the three of us, we do manage internal, external, and otherwise. And I think that just helps us all be on the same page.
I find the largest difference between internal communications and external communications is the listening. Mm-hmm. I find with listening to the public and other external stakeholders, it's important to listen, but you're working on your internal stuff and then informing them and updating them and giving them the information that they need. When you're working on internal communications, it's very different in the sense that the motivations are people want to feel empowered. Mm-hmm. They want to feel that they matter within an organization. How do you separate the way that you listen from one group of people to another?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know that we do separate it. It's always something that we are aware of in every communication we do. It's knowing your audiences and thinking through strategically how what you are saying may impact both. We have to be very cautious. For example, when a complaint comes into the police service, whether it's through social media or we're responding to a media request, not to throw our members under the bus while responding publicly and acknowledging some community members' concern. So it's definitely a bit of a tight-roping act, and we have to manage that in almost every communication that we do.
When you look at the communications that you do as an organization compared to other public bodies, like, I don't know, a hospital or a council, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, you all have varying degrees of privacy of what you can say and what mm-hmm. you can't say. But do you feel that because sometimes maybe there's fear associated or deep public concern, like with a council, deep public concern is going to be about potholes or road mm-hmm. closures, etc.
Right.
Deep public concern with what you deal with is a very different thing. And do you feel that sometimes, whether it's the timelines or the pressure to give updates is potentially greater?
I think when it comes to public safety, you can always say that. Issues that bother people in their day-to-day lives are certainly, I mean, take a look at the fire pit debate and the rhetoric that was around that. But when it comes to public safety, people have a different kind of fear about them. You look at, for instance, what happened in New Brunswick a few years ago with the four Mounties and the manhunt that went on for the shooter and the social media dialogue around that and people wanting to know if they were okay. There was a lot of different, I mean, I could talk about that for forever, but a lot of different things we saw come out of that. And I think from a police standpoint, you have a bigger expectation on you than, say, council would for potholes.
Yeah.
But I think also on that note, social media is where people are turning to in that. So the onus on that part of it to be responsive quickly and efficiently and give them the information that they need to know. And that's another thing that we have to sort through in my job is the community's need to know versus their want to know. So, you know, if somebody sees an ambulance, a fire truck, and a police vehicle down the street at their neighbors and they say, what's going on? That's a want to know. Or, you know, their need to know could be, am I safe here? And we say, yes, you are. But that's really all we can share. People are afforded privacy. You have no idea what was happening down there, nor do you need to know. So it's differentiating, and people will argue that point about whether it's a need or a want. But really, ultimately, it comes down to public safety.
And if there is, say, a major incident of some kind, and there are multiple organizations involved, whether it's, fire, police, ambulance, whatever it is, plus local authority, there's obviously got to be a very coordinated communications effort to have. Is it like when there's a major incident and there's a hierarchy of a control of message? Mm-hmm. When it's not such a big issue, because we've all seen the case studies of what's happened with whether it's been forest fires or other incidents around the country and internationally. But what about a smaller incident? Maybe a big RTC, a big collision of some kind that's not huge, but it's more about the information given to the traveling public, let's say. Mm-hmm. What happens if there's a disconnect between the different bodies and maybe someone says a road's open and maybe it isn't, and mm-hmm. I don't know if it's ever happened, but is there a scenario where, you know, someone has to go, hi, everybody, we need to come back to the table. Mm-hmm. This is the message.
I think it depends on what the incident is, if there's time for that. And again, that could be as simple as just having, you know, a group text conversation between your counterparts. Again, I really advocate for those back channel communications in my line of work to make sure everyone's on the same page. So I have my counterparts' numbers in all of the emergency services. And
sorry, what's your go-to quick messaging app between everyone? If you've got to quickly blatter out, what do you use?
I use iPhone, like iMessage right
so
now.
So iMessage, right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then going back to your last question, in the instance of, it depends what the incident is, who takes the lead. So if it's a fire, a major fire that's causing restrictions, fire is going to take the lead. We will probably put something out in regards to traffic restrictions, because that's where police assist with there. If it's, for example, the incident of the shooting downtown a couple years ago on 2nd, we would take the lead. So it really depends on what the incident is. But knowing that, you know, while at the same time we're releasing things, I'm talking to my counterparts and saying, okay, this is what we're saying, just so you know that everybody's on the same page.
When it comes to the way that your police service communicates compared to other police services in Canada, the idea of sharing best practice, does everyone come together? Is there, I don't know, an association of emergency service communicators or something?
Absolutely. There's, so under the Canadian Association Chiefs of Police, there is a communications or public affairs subsection there, and they have regular teleconferences. There is a yearly conference that people or that they will go to and have their general meeting. And that's really a discussion about best practices and scenarios that people have faced throughout or recently, and kind of decoding those and what I learned, what I would do differently, that sort of a thing. More locally, it was a few years ago, but I actually set up we call it the Saskatchewan Law Enforcement Social Media Group. So that's a provincial-wide group that brings together my counterparts in social media predominantly for, you know, kind of a meeting once a year. We bring in different speakers, whether it's through, I think the first year we had somebody do it through Skype. So it really gives us a lot of different opportunity.
So just on that, is it purely the different police in the province, or does it include jumping across to people with the RCMP as well, or just the other?
No, with RCMP as well. So we limit it to policing, and RCMP do have different detachments that are on social media, so we make sure that all those people are invited with the same premise of best practices, because they're just starting out, and typically these constables are just doing it off the side of their desk. There may be one of four people in the detachment and they've recognized a need. So I really wanted to make sure that I was supporting. I'm very fortunate in my position that I've been able to go to many different conferences on these topics. And so to bring back my learning and expertise, I think is valuable for those people. So that was something I'm very proud to have started.
Well, I think that's an amazing thing, and it's not only taking the initiative and filling the void that, you know, something needs to be done here, but seeing it move on and bring other people in and let that evolve on its own as well. We have to talk about something.
Okay.
It's come to that time, and anyone's done any Googling and looking up of Saskatoon Police Service, there was that video. Now, the Backstreet...
Whichever one are you talking about?
It could well be the Backstreet Boys parody video, which was, I have to say, epic. When I saw it trending with friends and in the media in the UK, mm-hmm. and I saw someone in Germany mentioning it, Okay, let's take a step back. We're going to talk about the positive side of it first. And then at the very end, and I'll give you fair warning, there were certain members of society who may have said, you're the police, you should be focusing on policing. Mm-hmm. Why are you wasting your time or money? Some said both without the facts. Mm-hmm. Why are you wasting time doing this? You should be out there catching criminals and doing whatever. Or doing policing, not whatever. So let's talk about the awesome piece of it. How did it come about that the Backstreet Boys parody video came to be?
So we had seen these come out in the U.S. mostly. That we hadn't seen any really from Canada. And I had thought that this would be an awesome thing to get involved with. However, it can also be difficult in my job to get police officers to embrace that side of things. Many just, you know, my job is to fight crime and to help people, and I don't want the recognition of being on social media or anything.
Is it the fear of ridicule?
No, I think it's just being humble, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think modesty, and, you know, I'm not in this for the fame and the glory. And
yeah.
So going back to the video, I had approached, you know, it was summer, so I had approached our school resource officers thinking, you know what, you don't have to be in schools at this time. What do you guys think? And they kind of hummed and hawed. And then a week later, I was approached by a constable in patrol. And his name is Cy Bray. And he was very interested and enthusiastic to get this done. So we put our heads together on finding a song. And they suggested Backstreet Boys. And we said, okay. That's good. We had a few others in the background.
What didn't make it?
You know, the one that I thought would have been really popular was Tonight's Gonna Be a Good Night by Black Eyed Peas.
Oh.
And I thought that would have been a perfect recruiting kind of, you see the guys and girls getting ready for a night shift. You know, that would have been, we could have done something really neat.
It's got
that.
A nice narrative to it.
Right. But also from a communications perspective, not that song is not an example, but you need to be careful of what the lyrics are. So we needed something to be very mundane, you can't construe it with anything else. And it's long been said that the Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way lyrics make no sense. So we opted.
You're pretty
for that.
Safe with nonsense.
Yes, exactly. So that was what we did. And my colleague and I in public affairs took the song and we broke it down by verse and we planned out an entire day of filming. And I don't know if you've ever worked with anyone that does shift work during summer holidays, but we just finally had to say, like, we need to just pick a day and people need to volunteer their time, because to try and find a date that worked for everyone, we'd still be planning into next year. So we picked a day. We hired an outside agency to help us with the filming and editing, but the production, the planning and all that was all done in-house. And we just had a fantastic time doing it.
I'm super impressed that you did the treatment yourself with the shooting script.
Mm-hmm.
It was fair enough contracting out to have the shots and
quality,
the production side,
yeah,
on that. That makes perfect sense. Use people who have that skill set,
mm-hmm,
rather than, because it'll only take longer to try and do it yourself.
Right.
And then that is a waste of resources in,
yeah,
that sense. Okay, so the video was released when?
It was a Friday morning, the first week of September.
Okay, and let's back time it, because us in production, we always back time. When did the concept come about doing it, and how long did it take to make it through the various edits?
So we did, it was probably the beginning of August that we were approached about this idea, or we had volunteers willing to do the idea. And then I think we filmed August 15th or 16th. We had a rough draft from our shooter that night. We had...
Wow!
Yeah, so...
Wow, I've never seen something turn,
yeah,
around that quickly.
Well, and it was, you know, if you had been there for the day of filming, everybody was just so enthusiastic. Everybody bought into it. We couldn't have faked that. And so right down to SickPics that did the video, and they were all in, and he was. So he did it that night. He gave us a rough cut, which was fantastic.
I was crying.
I was laughing so hard. And then, yeah, it was probably about a week or so later that we had the final one done. And we premiered it to the platoon that was mostly involved. So we went in and kind of had a – there was popcorn and candy. So we did our own kind of movie premiere and then released it that Friday, first week of September.
That timeline is ridiculously short.
Yeah.
But I also admire it in the sense that you are a public body. Mm-hmm. I can understand that if it had taken any longer, there would be definitely accountability questions being asked around it. So that's super impressive. That is such a compressed timeline. Now, it goes live. How much traction did you expect it to get?
Well, we expected it to be successful. I don't know that we expected it to be as successful. Mm-hmm. But I, that first Friday, I didn't leave my desk beyond to go to the washroom. I had somebody bring me lunch. And it was just, you know, because with social media, it's all about that interaction. So I was lobbing comments in there to continue to drive it, liking everybody's comments.
In that time, you used no automation to filter by sentiment.
Nope.
Wow.
I didn't use
there
anything.
There were a lot of messages.
It was a lot of refresh. but yeah, like for anybody that knows social media, that's how their algorithm works, right? You need that interaction. And so yeah, and that was really my entire weekend. I went home after work on Friday night, and I sat and watched a movie with my laptop in front of me and did the exact same thing. I did that all day Saturday. I was running the Regina half marathon on the Sunday, and I was even taking phone calls while I was running during that. And so it was a real commitment to making sure it, you know.
You gave it a chance to breathe, basically.
Yes.
Okay. So,
good way of putting it.
The prep, the activation, the interaction, and being there and bringing people in as a part of the community and celebrating with them their enjoyment.
And that's another point too, with, you know, bringing people in. We had, you know, mascots from various community organizations because we wanted other people to be part of it.
That's right.
And
I saw the Hulk and the Blades, right. Pochak and the other ones.
So we knew that would reach different audiences. And from a communication standpoint, we would get more buy-in.
That's a smart marketing move.
It was. And that was exactly why I wanted it in there.
Yeah, that's very sharp. I do like that.
And different iconic places in Saskatoon. So we had people filming us on their iPods while we were downtown, or iPads while we were downtown at the ice cream bus. So it really got people wondering, like, what's going on? And yeah.
So inevitably, you do, and I said this earlier, you do get people who go, you shouldn't be doing this. It's, you know, you're public servants. You should be out there, you know, catching the bad guys. We've got this, that, and the other going on. Yes, it was nice. It was fluffy, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. How do you respond to that?
I would ask, I suppose, people to consider what police need to be effective in their jobs. And my answer to that, or one of the answers, I suppose, is community support. So we used this as a way to achieve that. And the camaraderie that this built and within our service, but also within our city as a whole, or of our city, was really a source of pride. And it really helped show our officers are human, they like to have fun, and that builds that support. It makes them more approachable. You know, I heard from a member involved that somebody came into the service center about a file and that he had already reported on. And the officer said, well, do you know who the officer was? Well, yeah, it was the lead in the lip sync video. So we've had people at, you know, an officer was walking down Broadway and two girls wanted to take a picture with her because she was in the lip sync video. So that kind of support.
Was it the donut lady?
No, it's the lady in the red glasses.
Okay.
The one from the end. But, you know, the donut lady got called out on from the Backstreet Boys, right? So
absolutely.
So I think you cannot buy that kind of support. Like, the police need multiple things to be effective, but community support is by and large one of them. And actually, it's funny you bring this up, because we noticed a letter to the editor in last weekend's paper that was critical, exactly what you had said.
I didn't write it, just by the way. It
well,
wasn't
your
me.
Name wasn't on it.
Well, they normally say anon, but I just yeah. want to tie this in and say yeah. it wasn't me.
Fair enough. I appreciate it.
Also, I'm glad that you didn't use Shaggy, It Wasn't Me as the song.
Yeah, no, that one wouldn't have made the cut.
No.
But yeah, so we've penned a response because we think that people need to know. We recognize that Saskatoon has crime and there are things that police need to be doing. We are doing them, though. No city is going to be without crime, but we're better when our community supports us.
When was the last time that you produced something like an op-ed?
You know, we haven't done one in a few years, but as part of our communications strategy, we regularly meet with the editorial boards or the news directors of our local stations to discuss issues that we're facing, what they're facing. Just make sure those lines of communications are open. And when, you know, Chief Cooper is newer to Saskatoon, he's been here less than a year, that's what we did with him as well. Take him around to meet everybody. He's going to be dealing with these people. So I don't know that we've done an op-ed, but...
But a response nevertheless.
Yeah. Not as often as you would think.
So before time beats us and we have to leave this podcast, which I've been really enjoying, I've got a question for you. Mm-hmm. What was the appeal working for the police service over any other job in communications?
Well, I had... I think everybody... Most people, I'm not going to say everybody... When you see a police car or an ambulance going down the street with their lights going, you kind of have this innate wondering of where they're going, what's going on. And I definitely had that as a kid. I was in school. I took my education through Mount Royal University and had worked for an agency in Calgary, and this job came up. And I thought, I had no idea that that would be an option. And that was really what did it for me. I also really, it's a little bit twisted, but I love crisis communications. I think that rush of being able to help people and communicate with the information during a time when they're, you know, panicked and not understanding or knowing what's happening, I feel like that's my way of helping them.
I wouldn't say that that's weird at all, because I've got friends who volunteer for crisis lines such as the Samaritans. Mm. I've got friends who do this, and in with their conversations, with the way that they communicate, and then they have second line counselors who work with them. That for them, it's the listening, it's the being empathetic, it's everything around that, and then moving people and helping people in their scenario. I think to a slightly different extent with what you do in communications, if there's a really valid job, if there's a job which has merit, mm-hmm. it's the person who can, during a crisis, communicate and listen mm-hmm. in a really pragmatic way to help all of those involved, whether they're directly affected or indirectly affected, to support the systems in place that need to be supported. Mm-hmm. I think that's very admirable mm-hmm. as a role. And, you know, I'm not saying that there's other parts of communications that don't have merit, but they have differing needs and mm-hmm. differing importance. I'd say what you do is incredibly important. Before you leave us today, I'd like to give people the opportunity of finding out more about your organization and about what you do at your organization, because we work in communications. Mm-hmm. How can people get in touch with your organization? I've said your organization a lot. I've said it so much that if I say your organization again, it actually sounds weird in my head. So apologies for this. But how can people find out more, get in touch?
Well, we are on Twitter at Saskatoon Police, on Facebook at Saskatoon Police Service. If you wanted to reach out to me directly, you can find me at Kelsey Fraser on Twitter. And Kelsey is K-E-L-S-I-E, Fraser, F-R-A-S-E-R. And I would be happy to chat with anybody anytime.